Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 288. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank all of our sponsors. This isn't possible without them. I only partner with companies that I believe in both the people and the product, and all seven of our sponsors are fantastic people first and foremost, and they all have great products. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Tim Contos. Tim's the Associate AD of Sports Performance at Virginia Commonwealth, a guy that we've traveled in similar circles for so long, but just haven't had a chance to ever really sit down and hang out. But a guy I've respected from afar for many, many years and doing great things there at VCU. So thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Ron. I appreciate it.
You know, you started off, I think, at Radford, right? And then, you know, pretty much 20 years at VCU.
Yeah.
Talk about a specific experience. I mean, you haven't had too much before VCU, but you've had almost 20 years at VCU. Talk about a specific experience in your journey that's impacted you.
Oof. I mean, the whole thing's impacted me just from – you know, because I get questions all the time from recruits, parents coming in. They're like, why have you stayed at one place for so long? And it's the process that's, you know, I akin it to the walk into school uphill both ways in the snow kind of story. But
right.
Starting at VCU was, you know, when they said, you know, my resume got in the right people's hands, they said, would you be interested in the position? I said, yeah, sure. They showed me the weight room, and I had basically already accepted the position. I was floored. You know, there's Nautilus equipment in there that wasn't really Nautilus equipment. It was just knockoff.
Right.
But equipment that had some sort of cam in it. It was a 1,000-square-foot weight room with no windows, no AC. So it's, you know, and now where we're at, we're a 7,000-square-foot weight room with four full-time employees. We've got a couple of different facilities. I mean, VCU's just grown by leaps and bounds. So it's hard to narrow it down to any one specific thing along the way. I mean, there's a lot of things that have impacted me.
Yeah, you know, it's such an important part of the journey, you know, is experiencing, you know, the hardship of having to build something from scratch. I mean, at South Florida, we had a 2,000-square-foot weight room, two platforms. Four squat racks.
And you get real creative real quick.
Yeah, you had to, you know, I had literally nine lift straight lift groups that would eat my sandwich on the floor while I'm coaching, you know. Stay alive. But you do. You become resourceful, you become, you know, and I think it's, you know, for all the young coaches that are listening, don't be afraid of those opportunities that seem like on the outside aren't very appealing because they make you the best coach possible.
Exactly. I remember recently I pulled up some pictures of the old weight room so I could show people where we came from kind of thing. And there was in the middle of the picture, there's my cooler sitting on the floor because I didn't have a fridge to put stuff. I did the same thing. Ate my sandwich sitting on the floor in the weight room.
Yeah.
You know, and I would have to go to the study lounge because I didn't have a laptop back then. This is 98.
Right.
So I had to borrow computers from the kids in there. And at one point, you know, kids coming in for study hall, they get precedent, like, you got to go. I was like, yeah, you're right.
Well, you know, you don't have the journey that you've had without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learned from it?
You know, it's interesting. I was brushing up on some previous shows so I could come up with some decent answers with this. And I think one of the biggest mistakes I made was I got some really bad advice from a colleague, and he was in a similar situation in that at that point in time, VCU didn't put a whole lot of stock in in strength and conditioning. Now, it's completely different now. So let me put that asterisk out there. But so he was in a similar situation, and he was like, you know what you need to do is you need to make your primary teams your main thing. Then your next priority needs to be your lifts, your own lifts. So, you know, I'm competitive power lifter, or was at that point in time. So I did that for a little while, and I was like, I'm robbing the student athletes. I'm, you know, I don't want to say robbing the system, but I was robbing the kids out of something good. Now, it didn't last very long. And one of my biggest motivations after that was to become exactly like that guy. I'm sorry, become exactly opposite of sure. that guy.
Sure.
Where, you know, I had heard through the grapevine a lot of things that he was doing was, you know, he would say one thing and then you go into his weight room and it's completely different.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things that I wanted from that point on. I wanted our kids to take a lot of pride in doing things the right way, no matter who was watching. You know, whether it's squat depth or pausing on a bench press, whatever the case is, take a lot of pride in doing it the right way.
Right. You're going
to see a lot of inflated numbers on the internet and all the other things, but let's do it the right way.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, it's such an important part of the process as well I talk about in my book, I talk about being a technician, a manager, an entrepreneur, right? And we all got into strength because we love to lift and we love to train and technician parts, sets and reps and the exercises and protocols. Those are things that all appeal to all of us. But when you become that manager and you have to manage time, people and resources,
mm-hmm.
That's the difficult part. And one of those things is your own personal workout, you know, and it's such a hard thing because you want to get it in. You want to be that guy but you know, a lot of times you're thinking,
and how are you going to preach to the kids? How are you going to preach to the kids about time management if you can't manage your own time?
Exactly right. And to be fair, I mean, we all work 12, 13, 14 hours a day and it's hard and you got to be creative. I mean, there's many, many years where my workout, I would have a couple sets before the first group and a couple sets before the second group and, you know, on and on and on, but you got to do what you got to do. But the priority is the kids, the priority
right.
is the athletes. So yeah, it's such an important point. Well, you talked a little bit about it at the beginning, but you've been at the same place for almost 20 years now.
Yeah. It'll be 21 in January.
21 in January. So 20 years. Yeah. So, you know, that's something that just doesn't happen, you know, and you've had your opportunities. You've had your opportunities to leave throughout, you know, early on when it wasn't as appreciated as it is now. You're probably looking for the next gig, or, you know, right away, you know, but you've stuck it out. You've stayed in the same place 20 years, and it's something that we should all strive towards. What are some takeaways? What are some things that you would recommend to that young coach that's getting in to look for or to learn from your experience with being in the place?
You know, I think a lot of people will, a lot of younger athletes, and this is your typical interview question, where do you want to be in 5 years? And so they come up with some answer and, you know, and a lot of people really start believing it and saying, this is what I want to do. And this is, you know, this is how I'm going to go about getting there. The reality of the situation in that regard is that you're not making those decisions for you. Somebody else is making those decisions. And I didn't consciously do that, but intuitively I was like, you know, every time I went to the administration for something at VCU, it was all about the bottom line. And it got frustrating and it was like, well, I can be mad about that and I can, you know, huff and go pound sand, or I can make the best of every single day while I'm at VCU. And it's what you say on a daily basis on the show, make the big time where you're at.
Yeah.
And that one of the things I tried to do, and it was every session was, how can I get better? Every session was, you know, I did an honest evaluation. Did I give my all? No. Okay. Why not? Or did the kids give their all? No. Why not? So, so doing that on the daily, and that's one of the things when our new administration came in, they saw that, and that they, you know, one of the things I was told, I was recently appointed director of sports medicine. And when my athletic director made that decision, he said, you go in the weight room and it's clear that the student athletes are the number one priority when you go into Contos's facility. And that's, you know, that's just something I was like, oh, wow, that's, I'm being rewarded for something like that. I'm right. doing, you know, it's, I'm doing my job, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think, it, I mean, there's so many things to take away from that. I mean, obviously one is, you know, yeah, it's the thing that we preach constantly is make the big time where you're at. And if you do that, good things are going to happen and people are going to come find you and you're going to have opportunities. And
right.
I think, you know, one of the things we'll get into a little bit later on is balancing, you know, family with this profession. But mm-hmm. you know, when we were back in 1997, 98, when we were both kind of getting into it, you know, mm-hmm. You weren't thinking about wife and kids and
no.
school district no. and those types of things. But you really want to be happy in life, you know, then you're going to be thinking about those things later yeah. down the road. And sometimes the best thing is not chasing that logo. And, you know,
right.
and being part of building something great.
Yeah. And that was one thing I never understood it. You know, I'm not a major sports fan. So that kind of, in this regard, it works in my favor that I'm able to be happy where I'm at and do everything I can to try and push forward. And it's, yeah. you know, you can look at every single limitation around you, or you can try and find, say, okay, I'm going to do what I can with what I got.
Yeah. And I think the other part of that is actually, you know, I mean, there's the satisfaction that comes with, you know, training athletes and being a part of their lives and seeing the transformation and all that. But there's
oh, yeah.
another satisfaction that comes with taking a place that didn't prioritize training and conditioning to now it's, they're rewarding you as the director of the entire, you know, sports performance department and recognizing the importance of your position and the impact that you make, not just in the weight room, but outside of the four walls of the weight room.
Yeah. Yep.
You mentioned becoming that associate AD. And I think that, you know, I talk on the show quite often about there being three ways that I think our profession needs to grow, you know, mm-hmm. We need to create a degree in strength and conditioning. That has to happen. You know, that's
yeah.
going to do research. It's going to lead to jobs for aging strength coaches to be professors. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot of things. The second thing I always say is that you need to, you know, we need to put a strength coach in every high school. That needs to become a priority.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the third thing is that I think that we have to become associate athletic directors. We have to become mm-hmm. high performance managers where we're, you know, we're leading these departments.
Yeah.
And the reason why that makes sense for a strength coach, in my opinion, is because we typically have the head coach's ear, the AD's ear, the trainer's ear, the nutritionist's ear, and there's mutual yep. respect across the board. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's not, you know, I mean, right now that's not the commonplace and that's not the norm. And I'm sure yep. you've experienced some challenges, you know, taking on a position like you have.
Absolutely.
What have been the positives and the negatives of taking on this role?
Well, I'm still new in it. So let me give you that. So I'm still facing quite a few challenges, but I would have to say the biggest challenge that I faced was that I'm not a medical professional. You and I and everybody else can say, well, we know quite a bit about injuries, but we're not licensed professionals.
Right.
And that's one of the things and there's a lot of things that go into developing policies and procedures that in order to make that final say, I have to have that license, but I don't. So I've got to rely on the people around me, and I inherited a great group of sports medicine staff at VCU. Like they unfortunately had to go through our previous director of sports medicine left in a pretty quick hurry, and they had to pick up and move forward without any guidance from a supervisor. And they did a fantastic job. So when I came in to take over, it was, you know, status quo. Things ran like off without a hitch. But again, so I think that's probably the biggest challenge. The other thing is, you know, I had talked with my good buddy, Rick Canner. He's the director of sports medicine over at Longwood University. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting watching him because he kind of went through this path before I did. And you know, he's picking up all these things along the way. And he's like, I'm trying to make myself obsolete or not obsolete. I keep transposing words so that you get a lot of the bigger programs. His university had gone into a higher conference and, you know, he worked with men's basketball. so what's the first thing that happens? You get a head coach that either he gets canned or a new one comes in. What's going to happen to him? So he's trying to pick up a lot of things along the way. So he was one of the first people I called.
Right.
But I'm watching him do this stuff, and I'm like, is this really what it's going to take for us to stay in the business for that long? But the reality is also in the back of my mind, I'm going, you know, can I stay on the floor coaching? You know, one of Rick and I's good friends, Todd Hammer, wrote an article, and he's like, you know, you want to – maybe it was Ryan Horn, sorry. I'm not trying to name drop all over the place. But he said, you say you want to retire in strength and conditioning, but are you going to be on the floor at 65 coaching?
Right.
Yeah, I do want to be on that, but is that feasible? Am I going to be able to relate to a student athlete who's 18 to 22 at 65? Probably not. So what's the end? Well, administration is probably the best way to go. Now, the positives is long-term, I'm going to be able to impact more people. So it's kind of, you know, you talk about making an impact on a student athlete's life. Well, with our coaching trees, you get people who are under us. And if we can positively influence those coaches, then they positively influence their student athletes. Now our reaches are far greater.
Right.
You know, kind of going back to the challenges, one of the other things is that Rick pointed out to me very early on, he's like, you're going to have to communicate with them differently than you communicate with your coaches. And sure, I get that. I've got a male on staff. I've got a female on staff. I've got, you know, a younger guy. I've got an older guy. I'm not going to talk to them the same way, but it's a completely different group. But then again, it's the same sort of thing is we don't talk to administrators the same way we talk to our student athletes or the same way we talk to our coaches. It's just having to be able to put on that, you know who you're talking to and putting on different hats when you're talking to them.
Yeah, I think those are, you know, all valuable skills. And I've talked about this ever since, I've been talking about this for 20 something years about retiring. And I had every strength coach at a round table at the NSCA stand up and said, sit down if you can't name more than five people that have retired in this business. And the whole room sat down, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, really scary stuff. And I think that, you know, developing skill sets beyond just the normal skill sets of a strength and conditioning coach are very, very important, you know, if you're going to have longevity in this profession. The key is to try to find ways to stay connected to it, you know, because you've invested so much, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you've done that, obviously, with your role and you know, being smart. But it also it advances the profession. I think that's the other part of the piece that strength coaches need to wrap their head around is our legacy. We're still in infantile stages of this profession. It's still under 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to make sure that we are advancing it and getting these types of roles makes it so you have a seat at the big kids table. You can make some decisions that help impact the
right. Right.
So and
I think one of the big ways of doing that is, you know, number one, trying to find the best ways to help the student athlete. And so some of the things along the way that kind of helped me with that is I pushed for or was part of our nutritional concerns team. And so that gave me a little bit of an administrative role. So it was myself, it was the director of sports performance, along with our dietitian and our at the time, our director of sports medicine. So that gave me a little bit of administrative role. And then I was appointed onto our senior athletic leadership team, and we're involved with trying to, number one, disseminate information from the higher administration in the athletic department down to the people who are on the ground floor. But then also we're in charge of continuing education. So those things, you know, it was never anything that was, I'm going to do this to further my career, but it was in order to do the best job right now, these are the things that I need to push for. Yes. So.
Yeah, I think it's so important. It's so important. And that's, you know, again, you got the people that complain and just want to sit downstairs and not do anything and, you know, bitch and complain about what's not being done. But then you got the ones that take action and are part of the process and find the solutions from within. And
right. You got we got guys and girls, we call them roadblocks. All they do is sit there and create roadblocks. Well, yeah. What about this? Well, then they find five roadblocks for why that wouldn't work. Would you stop already? let's push forward. Let's figure this out. There's got to be a way.
And the bigger takeaway, in my opinion, is who better than the strength coach to be an advocate for the student athlete? You know, the person right. dealing with every single athlete all the time. You have the pulse. You have your thumb on the pulse of the institution, and I think that's where ADs can really, you know, see the value. One of the things that I would do later in my career was I made sure we trained our AD, mm-hmm. you know, and that gave us time to have those types of conversations. And when we did that, it inevitably made us better. You know,
okay. yeah.
I think that's another way of, you know, if you're not ready to go in the administration route. Get your associate AD or get your AD to work out with you guys, you know, when you staff lift or something, and you'd be amazed at how much gets done when that happens.
Yeah, and you know, and conversely, you know, kind of go back to when you're figuring out when your workouts are. In my early stages, I used to get so upset when somebody would come in the middle of my workout. They'd see it. I'm all geared up. I got chalk everywhere, wrist straps on, and they're having a 20-minute conversation with me.
Yeah.
Now I realize that's when relationships are built.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some coaches that walk in the weight room. I'm going to go hang up my belt. Yeah. It's not going to happen today. But again, it's one of those things it's amazing what happens when those things happen. And it's also amazing what happens when you turn somebody away and say, hey, can I get back to you in 5 minutes?
Yeah.
And you do get back to them. You follow up.
Yeah,
but they're that put off by it. So
yeah.
let yeah. it happen. Happens.
Yeah, I agree. You know, another part of that though is it ended up being not me training them. I would have my assistants do it so that they could build a relationship. You know,
yeah.
and you want to talk about a powerful way to do that. You know, make it so that it's easier to ask for a raise for that person is let them know them and know what type of person they are. You know, you mentioned earlier. You know, young strength coaches and mentoring young coaches. You know, it's easy for guys like us that have been in this for a while to be the crotchety old men and say, you know, back in our generation or millennial coaches. But there is, you know, there is some differences between, you know, this, but there is a lot more similarities than there are differences. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for both the young strength coach coming into the profession now that you see are common problems, and what advice do you have for those old crotchety strength coaches like us mentoring them?
I would say for the young ones coming in, don't be afraid to let your work do the talking. There are too many people that come in and they want to prove that they're the smartest guy in the room, and they ramble on and on and on. You know, and I'm sure you run into this, coach, when you go to conferences, you get somebody who's talking to you and you're like, you turn to whoever you're with, you're like, how long has this guy been in the field? 2 years. Like, do I really want to take advice from this guy? At any rate, so don't be afraid to let your work do the talking for you, number one. And then number two, you got 2 years and one mouth for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it goes right along with that same theme. Now, for the older coaches, you got to listen. The older coaches are mentoring the young coaches. You got to listen. They have to feel heard and they have to have a voice. And that's one of the things that my new staff in the sports medicine side, it's taking a little bit of adjustment for them, is that I will check with virtually all of them, especially the ones who are, you know, the more senior athletic trainers, and say, what have we done before? How have we handled this? How can we improve this? So I'm going to check with everybody, and I do that with my sports performance staff as well. Check with everybody before I make a decision. Now, is what they say going to have 100%, you know, influence on it? Probably not, but I'm going to get feedback from them, and we're going to move forward with the best decision possible. But I would say, again, listen to your staff. They have to feel like they have a voice. They have to feel heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I've learned the most is that autonomy, you know, that's one of the things that motivates most people, is having autonomy and feeling like they have, you know, a voice in what they do and say. And I think that's all of us. I don't think that that's a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we do that. Now, what we lack as young coaches, in my opinion, is perspective. You know, we look at an isolated incident and without all the information sometimes, you know, why is that guy showing, you know, why are we doing this in our workout? You know, why does the coach want us to do this in the workout? And they'd have no context into the bigger picture.
Right, right.
And I think what I do now is I have a standing rule that you don't come to me with a problem without a solution. You know,
I like that, you know, I've done that with one or two employees, but I think that's a good standing rule to have.
Because I want you to start to think like a head strength coach. I want you to start to think like, you know, like I have to.
Or an administrator.
Or an administrator, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And by doing that, now we can give some context. We can say, well, why, you know, we can add where our rationale is. And I think having everybody have a voice and feel like they've put in, I think that's always important.
Yeah.
But I think the number one thing, like you mentioned, is providing some perspective and some context to, you know, to decisions that are made. And I think that that's the part that we lack sometimes. We just want to say, just do it because I said to do it. Well,
yeah.
That's going to lead to some, you know, dissension in the ranks, you know?
Yeah. And there's a time and a place also. And that's one of the reasons why I've got when my boss, when our athletic director came in, I got a new boss, a deputy athletic director, and he was like, I want to start doing biweekly, so every 2 weeks, 20-minute meetings. And I was like, are you kidding me? I don't have time for this. But it's one of the best things ever, and it's one of the things I do with my staff, that you may make decisions on the fly, but it's in those 30-minute meetings where I can explain to them, here's why we had to do it this way. And here's why I needed you to do it without question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, one of my favorite things, just watching you from afar, is when you post your movie reviews with your kids.
Yeah.
I don't do the review, which I kick myself every time I see you do that. But I've made our kids, you know, watch every 80s great movie and every 90s great movies now, and we have fun with it. You know, they actually have fun with it. But you know,
how old are you?
We have 21-year-old, we have 2 18-year-olds and a 16-year-old right now.
Okay, all right.
And so they're on the tail end here, but you know, they love it. You know, it's time with dad. You know, and it's just kind of one of the things. And same thing with you and your kids. You know, talk about, you know, how you've maintained as best you can a work-life balance with the challenges that this profession brings.
Wow. I want to figure out just how deep I want to go with this, but it was, you know, for a long time, it was just trying to create the relationships that I, and accessibility. And that's so difficult. And for a long time, I had I'm divorced now, but my ex-wife was pretty understanding of everything that went on that went into the program and developing it. And so when I did get separated and I started having more one-on-one time with my kids, and this is a powerful lesson for just about anybody out there. But when I started having basically assigned one-on-one time, a couple hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I was asking my kids, I was like, how are you doing with everything? And they said, oh, it's good. We get more time with you this way. And that was just a really eye-opening. Like, that's one of those really hard lessons.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that I learned it when I did. Now, I could have learned it earlier, but it's one of those things, you know, you don't want to repeat that again. So. Absolutely. And we had started our movie times before that, but again, just kind of learning that hard lesson, I think it's kind of like when you get, you know, the equivalent is when you get removed from your main sport responsibility, whether they bring in another coach or something like that, it's some humble pie, but you're either going to get really freaking good afterwards and you're going to do a hell of a job, or you're going to get out of the profession, you know?
Yeah.
So I've done what I can to become the best dad possible for them. And so, you know, trying to find that time, trying to find the common ground too. I've got a girl and a boy, and they, you know, they're actually pretty similar as far as their likes and dislikes, but it was like trying to find something that they wanted to do. They didn't have similar interests in sports or anything like that. And so it was like, all right, well, we can watch a movie. What do you guys want to watch?
Right.
And so we started doing that, and it, you know, and you know, just like you're talking about, you're like, what'd you guys think? And like, oh, well, let's post this on Instagram, or let's post on, it was Facebook at the time, you know?
Yeah.
So let's post on Facebook, and let's start doing reviews. And then one night I was like, let's create a page. Now I'm not active on that page anymore. We still do the movie reviews.
Right.
But you find time when you can. And one of the, you know, this will be moving forward into the book review, but or the book I'd recommend, but Just One Thing, the guy talks about there's no such thing as multitasking, you know, right. So I can't take care of work issues and watch a movie with my kids at the same time. So I'm going to do just one thing, and I'm going to do my best to shut down whatever it is outside. You know, if it's work, I'm going to turn my phone off. I'm going to put it off to the side, you know, and now we've kind of moved on to, we make dinner together. And I'll turn my phone off while we're making dinner. We talk about our day and everything else. And then we sit down and we watch the next thing is an episode of House. So you haven't seen enough movie reviews lately because we've been watching House. I don't know if everybody wants a review of every episode of House, but but it's still that time.
Well, I think that's the critical piece, right? Time, you know, you spell love, T-I-M-E, you know, what you love, you'll spend time on. And uh-huh. Ways to do that. And finding tactical, you know, ways to do that is hard. You know, one of the biggest things for me was, you know, early on, I really tried to keep them kind of out of the weight room because I was worried about them, you know, safety and being in the way, yeah. Or being a menace or whatever. But it's actually those times that are the best times when I, you know, when they would do something, you know, I remember, this is a funny story. I was coaching up at Eastern and our kids came up and they were, I don't know, you know, 14, 13, 14. And I'm sitting there leading stretch and that song, the Nene song comes on, right? And I'm leading stretch and all of a sudden I look over and our kids are all doing the Nene. And the players are just busting up laughing, you know? It was just a really cool moment, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and even though it was somewhat embarrassing with the way they were dancing, it was kind of like, you know, like, you know, that's going to be in my memory for the rest of my life.
Yeah. You know? Apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, huh?
Yeah. No, I cannot. but they, you know, I think that's the critical piece is finding things that you guys can be doing things together, but then also sharing your world with them.
Yeah,
we have the opportunity to work in a pretty cool world. We work with diverse people that are typically leaders that are high performers. Mm-hmm. Who better to have be around our kids? You know.
Oh yeah, 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 and you know, and they get to see the end result when you know we're going to their wedding or they're having kids and they're sending pictures and things like that. It's they're like, wow, you coach them. Like you knew them when they were 18.
Yeah. Right.
You know, when did you know their girlfriend? No, they moved on and they're an adult now. So it's
right. Pretty
cool. Yeah. I tried to get my kids in there and, you know, and not push it and just have them be around it initially. And then, hey, do you want to go lift? And we did get into lifting for a little while. And then both my kids got into jujitsu and, you roll, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Love it.
And so I got into it as well, but then injuries are, it was ironic because I was getting into it so that it would take the place of lifting, but it would ended up being worse for me than lifting did. So
I've got a hamstring injury right now from it. I hear you, man. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so just trying to get them involved any way they can, but at the same time, not pushing.
Yeah, I mean that's the other part of the equation, right? Is that we're used to performing or producing and challenging high performers, and we got to remember mm-hmm. our kids aren't always living up to that. You know, they don't always grow in a lot of ways, and so it is. But it's as you would attest, obviously, you know, in that same presentation where I asked how many, you know, sit down if you can't name more than five coaches. I also asked, I said, sit down if you yourself or you know somebody that's gotten a divorce because of this profession, you know, and a good majority of the people sat down, you know, and we've got to start having those types of conversations on how we can become better people for our home team, because if our home team's not right, then our team is never going to be right.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's not an easy one to have, because there are so many different people from so many different walks of life and so many different perspectives on relationships, you know, and the way things are should not be, or the way to correct them, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so it's, that's not an easy one, man.
No, but starts with conversations, right?
Exactly. Yep. For sure.
Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
The antithesis of the best piece of coaching advice, because it caused me to go in the right direction when that guy was like, you need to make your workouts a priority.
Yeah.
And it's the exact opposite. You got to make the kids, the student athletes, the priority.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
So book, I would say Just One Thing. And then Train to Win by Martin Rooney. That's one that's not that came out in, you know, early 2000s. And then it's such an easy read, and he's such a charismatic individual. That's another thing. If you were ever to go see a public speaker, Martin Rooney, you will get every dime's worth of of your money. I mean, it's just, he's just fantastic.
He's a character.
Yeah. And then app. You know, I was going to go to one of my younger associates and ask them what they utilize. Instagram and Facebook is what I'm, you know, what I'm utilizing right now. Website, Elite Fitness, EliteFTS.com. Plethora of information, everything from strength and conditioning to powerlifting to just general fitness information, nutrition. Our friend Todd Hammer writes a column on there. By the coach, for the coach, and he's very candid about his travels and the things that he sees. And he was actually I don't know if you'll appreciate me saying this, but he was actually my first graduate assistant here at VCU.
Yeah.
And he and I have become great friends, and he's a great resource, and he's one of these guys that has been able to, you know, I used to make fun of him, say that he was made of glass because he wasn't flexible, and if you try to bend glass, it breaks. And so he's done a great job of trying to bend and trying to give coaches what they want, and you know, to try and better the profession and better his department.
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy. We've had him on the show as well, and just you know, I think the world of him is as well. Well, man, this has been fun. I think there's so many things to take away from it. I mean, being able to grow yourself, your skill set outside of just being a strength and conditioning coach, I think is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I think mentoring and legacy and giving back is so important. And I think the most important thing is focusing on that home team and finding ways, you know, to include them, to be a part of their lives, you know, and find unique, creative ways to make something that, you know, that's memorable. Those kids will remember that for the rest of their lives. So,
let me say this real quick, Ron. I would be remiss. A correction. I have two kids. My oldest is gender neutral. So if they get the opportunity to watch the show and hear me say that I've got a girl and a boy, they're going to be pretty pissed.
Yeah. Well, and I think, again, I mean, it's such a testament to you to know that and to talk about it. I think that's such a hard thing. Being a parent's one of the most difficult things in the world, you know, and we're lucky because
there's no owner's manual, dude.
We're lucky because we get to experience all these, all these diverse athletes and all these different things that we're a little bit more, I say worldly, but you know, we're a little bit more open to, you know, all kinds of different things. But I mean,
yeah,
kids, it's the toughest part. So again, it's a testament to who you are. So appreciate you, man. Appreciate what you do and how you do it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show, Ron. I really appreciate it. It's an honor.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.